She is good at this, Kaiyan. Perhaps better than I am.
It was Duke Roile's voice. Serini froze. She had gone looking for the washroom after bidding everyone farewell, and had expected them to be gone by now.
She is a very special young woman.
Their voices were coming from the kitchen. Serini slipped forward and listened outside the door.
She neatly slipped control away from me, and I still don't know where I went wrong. You should have warned me.
And let you escape, Roile? It's been a long time since anyone, including Ehane, got the better of you. It does a man good to realize he can still be taken by surprise once in a while.
She nearly lost it in the end there, though. I don't like being backed into corners, Kaiyan.
It was a calculated risk, my lord.
You all but threatened me, Serini. That is no way to make an ally. Especially of a crotchety old man such as myself.
The Duke and Kaiyan were sharing a bottle of Fjordal wine at the kitchen table.
A few days wouldn't have hurt our position, and I certainly would have given you my support. I've found that thoughtful, well-considered commitment is much more productive than spurious professions.
Serini nodded, slipping a glass from one of Kaiyan's shelves and pouring herself some wine before sitting.
I understand, Roile. But the others look to you. They trust your judgment. I needed more than your support, which, by the way, I know you would have given. I needed your open support. The others had to see you accept the plan before they would agree. It wouldn't have had the same impact a few days later.
Oh, perhaps. One thing is certain, Serini. You have given us hope again. Raoden was our unity before. Now you will take his place. Kaiyan or I couldn't do it. Kaiyan has refused nobility for too long. And no matter what they say, the people still want a leader with a title. And me. They all know that I helped Aiden start this monstrosity that has slowly killed our country.
That was long ago, Roile.
No. As the fair princess said, 10 years isn't long in the lifespan of nations. I am guilty of a grave mistake.
We will make it right, Roile. This plan is a good one, perhaps even better than Raoden's.
She would have made him a fine wife, Kaiyan.
Yes, fine indeed, and an even better queen. Domai moves in ways that are sometimes strange to our mortal minds.
I'm not convinced it was Domai's will that took him from us, Uncle. Have either of you ever wondered if, perhaps, someone might have been behind the prince's death?
The answer to that question borders on treason, Serini.
Any more than the other things we've said tonight?
We were only accusing the king of greed, Serini. The murder of his own son is it's another matter entirely.
Think about it, though. The prince took a contrary stance on everything his father did. He ridiculed Aiden in court. He planned behind the king's back, and he had the love of the people. Most importantly, everything he said about Aiden was true. Is that the kind of person a monarch can afford to have running free?
Yes, but his own son?
It wouldn't be the first time such a thing has happened.
True, but I don't know if the prince was as much of a problem to Aiden as you assume. Raoden wasn't so much rebellious as he was critical. He never said that Aiden shouldn't be king. He simply claimed that Aerilon's government was in trouble, which it is.
Weren't either of you even a little suspicious when you heard the prince was dead? It came at such a convenient time. Aiden has the benefit of an alliance with Teod, but now he doesn't have to worry about Raoden producing any heirs.
I think we have to at least consider the possibility, Roile.
So, what do we do? Try and find proof that Aiden executed his own son?
Knowledge will bring strength.
Agreed. You, however, are the only one of us with free access to the palace.
I'll poke around and see what I can uncover.
Is it possible he isn't dead? It would have been easy enough to find a lookalike for the casket. The coughing shivers is a very disfiguring disease.
It's possible.
But you don't believe it.
No. When a monarch decides to destroy a rival, he usually makes sure to do so in a permanent way. There are too many stories about lost heirs that reappear after 20 years in the wilderness to claim their rightful throne.
Still, perhaps Aedan isn't as brutal as you assume. He was a better man once. Never what I would call a good man, but not a bad one either. Just greedy. Something's happened to him over the last few years. Something that has changed him. Still, I think there remains enough compassion in Aedan to keep him from... Oh my God, from murdering his own son.
All right. I'll send Aeshi to search through the royal dungeons. He's so meticulous, he'll know the name of every rat in the place before he's satisfied.
Yersean? Where is he?
I sent him to Elantris.
Elantris?
That Fjordel Gjorn is interested in Elantris for some reason. And I make it my business never to ignore what a Gjorn finds interesting.
You seem to be rather preoccupied with a single priest, Eni.
Not a priest, Uncle. A full Gjorn.
Still only one man. How much damage can he do?
Ask the Duladan Republic. I think this is the same Gjorn who was involved in that disaster.
There's no sure evidence that Fjordin was behind the collapse.
There is in Teod, but no one else would believe it. Just believe me when I tell you that this single Gjorn could be more dangerous than Aedon.
The comment struck a lull in the conversation. Time passed silently. The three nobles drinking their wine in thought until Lucal entered, having traveled to retrieve his mother and siblings. He nodded to Serini and bowed to the Duke before pouring himself a cup of wine.
Look at you, Serini, a confident member of the boys' club.
Leader of it, more truthfully.
Your mother?
Is on her way. They weren't finished, and you know how mother is. Everything must be done in proper order, no rushing allowed.
Ah. Then you and I should get to cleaning before she returns. We wouldn't want her to see what a mess our collected noble friends have made of the dining room.
Lucal gave Serini a look that suggested he sometimes wished he lived in a traditional household, one with servants, or at least women, to do such things. Kaiyan was already moving, however, and his son had no choice but to follow.
Interesting family.
Yes, a little odd, even by Teoish standards.
Serini, we are indeed fortunate. You might very well be our last chance for saving Aerilan.
Thank you, Your Grace.
This country will not last much longer. A few months, maybe. A half a year, if we are lucky.
But I thought you wanted to wait. At least, that's what you told the others.
I'd convinced myself that little could be gained by their aid. Edain and Ahain are too contrary. And Shuden and Eondel are both too inexperienced. I wanted to mollify them while Kaiyan and I decided what to do. I fear our plans may have centered around more dangerous methods. Now, however, there is another chance. If your plan works, though I'm still not convinced that it will, we might be able to forestall collapse for a little longer. I'm not sure. 10 years of Aedan's rule has built momentum. It will be difficult to change it in only a few months' time.
I think we can do it, Roile.
Just make sure you don't get ahead of yourself, young lady. Do not dash in if you only have the strength to walk. And do not waste your time pushing on walls that will not give. More importantly, don't shove, or a pat would be sufficient. You backed me into a corner today. I'm still a prideful old man. If Shuden hadn't saved me, I honestly can't say if I would have been humble enough to acknowledge fault in front of all those men.
I'm sorry.
Just be careful. If this Gjorn is as dangerous as you claim, then there are some very powerful forces moving through K.E. Do not let Aerilan get crushed between them.
Early in his career, Raethan had found it difficult to accept other languages. Fjordel was Yadeth's own chosen tongue. It was holy, while other languages were profane. How then did one convert those who didn't speak Fjordel? Did one speak to them in their own language? Or did one force all true supplicants to study Fjordel first, It seemed foolish to require an entire nation to learn a new language before allowing them to hear of Yadat's empire. So, when forced to make the decision between profanity and infinite delay, Prathan chose profanity. He had learned to speak Aeonic and Duladin, and had even picked up a little Jinnuese. When he taught the people in their own tongue, though admittedly it still bothered him to do so. He spoke almost unconsciously, raising and lowering his voice to the rhythm of the sermon, performing the ancient art that was a hybrid offspring of prayer and theater. When he urged, they responded with cheers. When he condemned, they looked at one another with shame. When he raised his voice, they focused their attention, and when he lowered it to a bare whisper, they were even more captivated. It was as if he controlled the ocean waves themselves. He finished with a stunning admonition to serve in Yadeth's kingdom, to swear themselves as Odive or Krondet to one of the priests in Kaeyi, thereby becoming part of the chain that linked them directly to Lord Yadeth.
Yadeth be praised!
Prathan stepped down from the podium, satisfied. He had only been preaching in Kaeyi for a few days, but the chapel was already so packed that the people had to line up at the back once the seats were full. Only a few of the newcomers were actually interested in converting. Most came because Prathan himself was a novelty. However, they would return. They could tell themselves that they were only curious, that their interest had nothing to do with religion, but they would return. As Shu-Dareth grew more popular in Kaeyi, the people at these first meetings would find themselves important by association. They would brag that they had discovered Shu-Dareth long before their neighbors, and as a consequence, they would have to continue attending. Their pride, mixed with Hraithen's powerful sermons, would override doubts, and soon they would find themselves swearing servitude to one of the Arteths. The people at the back were beginning to file out of the chapel.
This gathering is not yet adjourned!
Prathan looked up at the podium with surprise. The meeting was to have ended after his sermon, but someone thought differently. Dilov had decided to speak.
Prathan has spoken words of love and praise for our Lord Yadeth, but he has forgotten to mention one thing. Elantris! The sickness that chokes the life out of this once great world! Lord Yadeth be praised, yes? But Elantris! Elantris must be burned!
His face was covered with sweat. His eyes were wide and haunting.
The world must be rid of the cancer, of the stinking awful within the gates of this once great city that is now nothing more than a pit of rot and death.
Prathan could feel the audience's zeal growing. Dilov's passion worked like a catalyst, like a mold that spread uncontrollably once it found a dank place to grow.
We must tear down Elantris!
Prathan watched with concern, and admittedly, jealousy. Unlike Prathan, Dilov hadn't been trained in the greatest schools of the East. However, the short priest had something Prathan lacked. Passion. Prathan had no hatred so severe that he wept, no loves so profound that he would risk everything in their name. He had always believed that he was the perfect follower of Yadeth, that his lord needed level-headedness more than he needed unbridled ardor. Now, however, he wondered. Dilov had more power over this audience than Prathan ever had. Dilov's hatred of Elantris wasn't logical. It was irrational and feral. But they didn't care.
They will die like maggots under our feet, and their city will be leveled to dust and ash.
Prathan could spend years explaining to them the benefits of Shu-Dareth and never get the reaction they now expressed. Part of him scoffed, trying to convince himself that the power of Dilov's words wouldn't last, that the passion of the moment would be lost in the mundanity of life. But another, more truthful part of him was simply envious. What was wrong with Prathan that in 30 years of serving Yadeth's kingdom, he had never once felt as Dilov seemed to at every moment?
Praise be to our Lord Yadeth!
Elof stumbled off the podium and collapsed onto one of the pews near the front of the room.
That was well done.
Duke Telrai watched the sermons from a private booth at the side of the chapel.
Having the short man speak after yourself was a wonderful move, Raylan. I was worried when I saw people growing bored. The young priest refocused everyone's attention.
Braithen hid his annoyance at Telrai's use of his name rather than his title.
Dilaf is a rare young man. There are two sides to every argument, Lord Telrai. The logical and the passionate. We have to make our attack from both directions if we are to be victorious. So, my lord, have you considered my proposal?
It is tempting, Raven. Very tempting. I don't think there is any man in Aerilon who could refuse it, let alone myself.
Good. I will contact Fjordan. We should be able to begin within the week.
Telrai nodded. Then, gesturing to his numerous attendants, the Duke made his way out the side door to the chapel, disappearing into the twilight. Praithan watched the door shut, then walked over to Dilov, who was still sprawled on the pew.
That was unexpected, Artith. You should have spoken with me first.
It was not planned, my lord. I suddenly felt the need to speak. It was only done in your service, my Rodan.
Of course.
Telrai was right. Dilaf's addition had been valuable. As much as Hraithen wanted to reproach the Arteth, he could not. He would be negligent in his service to Wern if he didn't use every tool at his command to convert the people of Aerilon. And Dilaf had proven himself a very useful tool.
Well, it is done. And they appear to have liked it. Perhaps I will have you speak again sometime. However, you must remember your place, Arteth. You are my Aldive. You do not act unless I specifically tell you. Is that understood?
Perfectly, my lord Raven.
Raven quietly shut the door to his personal chambers. Dilof was not there. Raven would never let him see what was about to take place. In this, Raven could still feel superior to the young Aerilish priest. Dilof would never rise to the highest ranks of the priesthood, for he could never do what Hraithen was about to do, something known only to the Giorns and Wern. Hraithen sat in his chair quietly, preparing himself. Only after a half hour of meditation did he feel controlled enough to act. Hraithen rose from his seat and moved to the large trunk in the corner of his room. It was topped with a stack of folded tapestries. Hraithen moved the tapestries reverently, then reached beneath his shirt to pull forth the gold chain that encircled his neck. At the end of the chain was a small key. With this, he opened the trunk, revealing the contents, a small metal box. The box was about the size of four stacked books, and its weight rested heavily in Hraithen's hands as he lifted it from the trunk. Its sides had been constructed of the best steel, and on its front was a small dial and several delicate levers. The mechanism had been designed by Svordan's finest locksmiths. Only Hraithen and Wern knew the proper method of turning and twisting that would open the box. Hraithen spun the dial and turned the levers in a pattern he had memorized soon after being appointed to the position of Giorn. The lock clicked, and Hraithen pulled the top open with a firm hand. A small glowing ball sat patiently inside.
You need me, my lord.
Be quiet! You know you're not to speak.
The ball of light bobbed submissively. It had been months since Hraithen last opened the box, but the Saeon showed no signs of rebelliousness. The creatures, or whatever they were, seemed to be unfailingly obedient. The Saeons had been Hraithen's greatest shock upon his appointment to the rank of Giorn. Not that he had been surprised to find the creatures were real, though many in the East dismissed the Saeons as Aeonic myths. Hraithen had, by that time, been taught that there were things in the world that were not understood by normal people. Wern himself had explained the necessity of using Saeons, but it had taken years for Hraithen to accept the idea. In the end, logic had swayed him. Just as it was sometimes necessary to speak in heathen languages to preach Yadath's empire, there were instances where the enemy's arts proved valuable.
Get me Wern.
The Saeon complied, hovering up a bit, questing with its abilities to seek out Wern's own hidden Saeon, one attended at all times by a mute servant whose only sacred duty was to watch over the creature. His Saeon began to drip like water, and then it formed into Wern's proud face. Noble, squarish features regarded Hraithen.
I am here, my son.
Oh, great lord and master, Yadeth's anointed, and emperor in the light of his favor.
Speak on, my Odive.
I have a proposal involving one of the lords of Erelon, great one.
This is it! Galadon, get over here.
The large doula set down his own book with raised eyebrows, then stood with his characteristic relaxed style and wandered over to Raoden.
What have you found, Su?
Raoden pointed to the coverless book in front of him. He sat in the former Karathi church that had become their center of operations. Galadon, still determined to keep his small book-filled study a secret, had insisted that they lug the necessary volumes up to the chapel rather than let anyone else into his sanctuary.
Sul, I can't read that. It's written completely in aeons.
That's what made me suspicious.
Can you read it?
No, but I do have this.
Raoden reached down and pulled out a similar coverless volume, its cover pages stained with Elantris grime.
A dictionary of the aeons.
Galadon studied the first book with a critical eye.
Sul, I don't even recognize a tenth of the aeons on this page. Do you have any idea how long it's going to take you to translate it?
It's better than searching for clues in those other books. Galadon, if I have to read one more word about the landscape of Fjordan, I'm going to be sick.
Whoever had owned the books before the Riod must have been a geography scholar, for at least half of the volumes dealt with the topic.
You're sure this is the one we want?
I've had a little training in reading pure aeon texts.
Riodan pointed at an aeon on a page near the beginning of the book.
This says Aeon Door.
All right, Sul. I don't envy you the task, however. Life would be much simpler if it hadn't taken your people so long to invent an alphabet, Golo.
The aeons were an alphabet, just an incredibly complex one. This won't take as long as you think. My schooling should start to come back to me after a little while.
Sul, sometimes you're so optimistic it's sickening. I suppose then we should cart these other books back to where we got them?
There was a measure of anxiety in Galadon's voice. The books were precious to him. It had taken Raoden a good hour of arguing to convince the doula to let him take off their covers, and he could see how much it bothered the larger man to have the books exposed to the slime and dirt of Elantris.
That should be all right.
None of the other books were about Aeon Dor, and while some of them were journals or other records that could hold clues, Raoden suspected that none of them would be as useful as the one in front of him, assuming he could translate it successfully. Galadon nodded and began gathering up the books. Then he looked upward apprehensively as he heard a scraping sound from the roof. Galadon was convinced that sooner or later the entire assemblage would collapse and inevitably fall on his shiny dark head.
Don't worry so much, Galadon. May Eri and Rhyile know what they're doing?
No, they don't. Sul, I seem to recall that neither of them had any idea what to do before you pressed them into it.
I meant that they're competent.
Raoden looked up with satisfaction. 6 days of working had completed a large portion of the roof. Marishe had devised a clay-like combination of wood scraps, soil, and the ever-prevalent Elantris sludge. This mixture, when added to the fallen support beams and some less rotted sections of cloth, had provided materials to make a ceiling that was, if not superior, at least adequate. Raoden smiled. The pain and hunger were always there, but things were going so well that he could almost forget the pain of his half-dozen bumps and cuts. Through the window to his right, he could see the newest member of his band, Loreen. The man worked in the large area beside the church that had probably once been a garden. According to Raoden's orders, and equipped with a newly fashioned pair of leather gloves, Loreen moved rocks and cleared away refuse, revealing the soft dirt underneath.
What good is that going to do?
You'll see.
Galadon picked up an armload of books and left the chapel. The doula had been right about one thing. They could not count on new Elantrians being thrown into the city as fast as Raoden had first anticipated. Before Loreen's arrival the day before, 5 solid days had passed without even a quiver from the city gates. Riordan had been very fortunate to find Marishe and the others in such a short period of time.
Lord Spirit?
Riordan looked up at the chapel's doorway to find an unfamiliar man waiting to be acknowledged. He was thin, with a stooped-over form and an air of practiced subservience. Riordan couldn't tell his age for certain. The Sheo tended to make everyone look much older than they really were. However, he had the feeling that this man's age was no illusion. If his head had held any hair, then it would have been white, and his skin had been long wrinkled before the Sheo took him.
Yes? What can I do for you?
My lord.
Go on.
Well, your lordship, I've just heard some things, and I was wondering if I could join with you.
Certainly, you may join us. What have you heard?
Well, some people on the streets say that those who follow you aren't as hungry. They say that you have a secret that makes the pain go away. I've been an Elantris for nearly a year now, my lord, and my injuries are almost too much. I figured I could either give you a chance or go and find myself a gutter and join the Hoheed.
Riordan nodded, clasping the man on the shoulder.
I'm glad you came. What is your name?
Kehair, my lord.
All right then, Kehair. What did you do before the Sheo took you?
Kehair's eyes grew unfocused, as if his mind were traveling back to a long time ago.
I was a cleaner of some sort, my lord. I think I washed streets.
Perfect! I've been waiting for one of your particular skill. Marishe, are you back there?
Yes, my lord.
Marishe's head poked out a moment later.
By chance, did those traps you set up catch any of last night's rainfall?
Of course, my lord.
Good. Show Kehair here, where the water is.
Certainly.
Marishe motioned for Kehair to follow.
But what am I to do with water, my lord?
It is time that we stop living in filth, Kehair. This slime that covers Elantris can be cleaned off. I've seen a place where it was done. Take your time and don't strain yourself, but clean this building inside and out. Scrape away every bit of slime and wash off every hint of dirt.
Then you will show me the secret?
Trust me.
Kehair nodded, following Marishe from the room. Riordan's smile faded as the man left. He was finding that the most difficult part of leadership here in Elantris was maintaining the attitude of optimism that Galadon teased him about. These people, even the newcomers, were dangerously close to losing hope. They thought that they were damned and assumed that nothing could save their souls from rotting away like Elantris itself. Riordan had to overcome years of conditioning teamed with ever-present forces of pain and hunger. He had never considered himself an overly cheerful person. Here in Elantris, however, Riordan found himself reacting to the air of despair with defiant optimism. The worse things got, the more determined he was to take it on without complaint. But the forced cheerfulness took its toll. He could feel the others, even Galadon, relying on him. Of all the people in Elantris, only Riordan couldn't let his pain show. The hunger gnawed at his chest like a horde of insects trying to escape from within, and the pain of several injuries beat at his resolve with merciless determination. He wasn't sure how long he would last. After barely a week and a half in Elantris, he was already in so much pain it was sometimes difficult to focus. How long would it be before he couldn't function at all? Or how long before he was reduced to the subhuman level of Sheor's men? One question was more frightening than them all. When he fell, how many people would fall with him? And yet, he had to bear the weight. If he didn't accept the responsibility, no one else would. And these people would become slaves either to their own agony or to the bullies on the streets. Elantris needed him. If it used him up, then so be it.
Lord Spirit!
Riordan looked as a worried Saolin rushed into the room. The hook-nosed mercenary had fashioned a spear from a piece of only half-rotten wood and a sharp stone, and had taken to patrolling the area around the chapel. The man's scarred Elantrian face was wrinkled with concern.
What is it, Saolin?
The man was an experienced warrior and was not easily unsettled.
A group of armed men coming this way, my lord. I counted 12 of them. And they are carrying steel weapons.
Steel? In Elantris? I wasn't aware that there was any to be found.
They're coming quickly, my lord. What do we do? They're almost here.
They are here.
Suddenly, a group of men forced their way through the chapel's open doorway. Saolin was right. Several carried steel weapons, though the blades were chipped and rusted. The group was a dark-eyed, unpleasant lot, and at their lead was a familiar figure. Or at least, familiar from a distance.
Karate.
Lorene should have been hers the other day, but Raoden had stolen him. Apparently, she had come to make a complaint. It had only been a matter of time. Raoden glanced toward Saolin, who was inching forward as if anxious to try his makeshift spear.
Stand your ground, Saolin.
Karate was completely bald, a gift from the Sheod, and she had been in the city long enough that her skin was beginning to wrinkle. However, she held herself with a proud face and determined eyes. The eyes of a person who hadn't given in to the pain, and who wasn't going to do so anytime soon. She wore a dark outfit, composed of torn leather. For Elantris, it was well made. Karate turned her head around the chapel, studying the new ceiling. Then the members of Raoden's band, who had gathered outside the window to watch with apprehension. Marisha and Kehair stood immobile at the back of the room. Finally, Karate turned her gaze on Raoden. There was a tense pause. Eventually, Karate turned to one of her men.
Destroy the building, chase them out, and break some bones.
Karate turned to leave.
I can get you into Iodon's palace.
Karate froze.
That is what you want, isn't it? The Elantris City guards caught you in Kei. They won't suffer you forever. They burn Elantrians who escape too often. If you really want to get into the palace, I can take you there.
We'll never get out of the city. They've doubled the guard recently. I haven't even been able to get out in a month.
I can get you out of the city, too.
Karate's eyes narrowed with suspicion. There was no talk of price. They both knew that Raoden could demand only one thing. To be left alone.
You're desperate.
True. But I'm also an opportunist.
Karate nodded slowly.
I will return at nightfall. You will deliver as promised, or my men will break the limbs of every person here and leave them to rot in their agony.
Understood.
Sul, I don't...
Don't think this is a good idea. Yes, Galadon, I know.
Elantris is a big city. There are plenty of places to hide that not even Karate could find us. She can't spread herself too thin. Otherwise, Sheor and Aeyndan will attack her. Golo?
Yes, but what then?
Raoden was trying the strength of a rope Marisha had fashioned from some rags. It seemed like it would hold his weight.
Karate wouldn't be able to find us, but neither would anyone else. People are finally beginning to realize we're here. If we move now, we'll never grow.
Sul, do we have to grow? Do you have to start another gang? Aren't three warlords enough?
Raoden stopped, looking up at the large doula with concern.
Galadon, is that really what you think I'm doing?
I don't know, Sul.
I have no wish for power, Galadon. I'm worried about life. Not just survival, Galadon. Life. These people are dead because they have given up. Not because their hearts no longer beat. I am going to change that.
Sul, it's impossible.
Raoden pulled the rope into a coil around his arm.
I'll see you when I get back.
What is this?
It's the city well.
Raoden peered over the side of the stone lip. The well went deep, but he could hear water moving in the darkness below.
You expect us to swim out?
No, we'll just let the current take us along. More like floating than swimming.
That's insane. That river runs underground. We'll drown.
We can't drown. We're already dead, remember? The Eiridale River runs directly underneath Elantris, then continues on to Kei. It runs around the city and past the palace. All we have to do is let it drag us. I've already tried holding my breath. I went an entire half hour, and my lungs didn't even burn. Our blood doesn't flow anymore, so the only reason we need air is to talk.
This could destroy us both.
The hunger would just take us in a few months anyway.
All right, Spirit. You go first.
Gladly.
Raoden didn't feel glad about that particular fact at all. Still, it was his idea. With a rueful shake of his head, Raoden swung over the side of the lip and began to lower himself. The rope ran out before he touched water, and so, taking a deep but ineffectual breath, he let go. The river was shockingly cold, and the current threatened to pull him away. But he quickly grabbed hold of a rock and held himself steady, waiting for Kurete.
Spirit?
I'm here! You're about 10 feet above the river. You'll have to drop the rest of the way.
And then?
Well, then the river continues underground. I can feel it sucking me down right now. We'll just have to hope it's wide enough the entire distance, otherwise we'll end up as eternal subterranean plugs.
You could have mentioned that before I got down here.
Something large was sucked past Raoden in the current.
Merciful Domai.
Raoden released the rock and let the river drag him beneath its unseen surface. Raoden did indeed have to swim. The trick was to keep himself in the middle of the river, lest he be slammed against the rock tunnel's walls. He did his best as he moved in the blackness, using outspread arms to position himself. Fortunately, time had smoothed the rocks to the point that they bruised rather than sliced. An eternity passed in that silent underworld. It was as if he floated through darkness itself, unable to speak, completely alone. Perhaps this was what death would bring. His soul set adrift in an endless, lightless void. The current changed, pulling him upward. He moved his arms to brace himself against the stone roof, but they met no resistance. A short moment later, his head broke into open air. His wet face, cold in the passing wind. Raoden blinked uncertainly as the world focused, starlight and the occasional street lantern granting only dim illumination. It was enough to restore his orientation, and perhaps his sanity. He floated lethargically. The river grew wide after rising to the surface, and the current slowed considerably. He felt a form approach in the water, and he tried to speak, but his lungs were full. A hand clamped around his mouth, cutting off his cough.
Quiet, fool!
Raoden nodded, struggling to control his fit. Perhaps he should have concentrated less on the theological metaphors of the trip, and more on keeping his mouth closed. Kurete released his mouth, but continued to hold onto his shoulder, keeping them together as they drifted past the city of Kei. Its shops were closed for the night, but an occasional guard patrolled the streets. The two continued to float in silence until they reached the northern edge of the city, where Iadon's castle-like palace rose in the night. Then, still not speaking, they swam to the shore beside the palace. The palace was a dark, sullen edifice, a manifestation of Iadon's one insecurity. Raoden's father was not often afraid, when he should have been intelligently apprehensive. The trait had earned him wealth as a businessman trading with the Fjordal, but it had brought him failure as a king. In one thing only was Iadon paranoid. Sleeping. The king was terrified that assassins would somehow sneak in and murder him as he slumbered. Raoden remembered well his father's irrational muttering on the subject each night before retiring. The worries of kingship only made Iadon worse, causing him to outfit his already fortress-like house with a battalion of guards. The soldiers lived near Iadon's own quarters to facilitate quick response.
All right.
Kurete watched uncertainly as guards crossed on the battlements.
You got us out. Now get us in.
Raoden nodded, trying to drain his sodden lungs as silently as possible.
We need to get to the west side.
Kurete nodded. She walked silently and quickly, much more so than Raoden could manage, like a person well acquainted with danger. Several times, she put back her hand in warning, halting their progress just before a squad of guards appeared out of the darkness. Her aptitude gained them the western side of Iadon's palace without mishap, despite Raoden's lack of skill.
Now what?
Raoden paused. A question now confronted him. Why did Kurete want access to the palace? From what Raoden had heard of her, she didn't seem like the type to exact revenge. She was brutal, but not vindictive. But what if he were wrong? What if she did want Iadon's blood?
Well?
Raoden decided at that moment he wouldn't let her kill his father. No matter how poor a king he was, he wouldn't let her do that.
You have to answer something for me first.
Now?
I need to know why you want into the palace.
You aren't in any position to make demands.
nor are you in any position to refuse them. All I have to do is raise an alarm, and we'll both be taken by the guards.
Garete waited quietly in the darkness, obviously debating whether or not he would do it.
Look, just tell me one thing. Do you intend to harm the king?
Garete met his eyes, then shook her head.
My quibble is not with him.
Raoden reached over, pulling back a patch of bushes that abutted the wall. Then he threw his weight against one of the stones. The stone sank into the wall, and a section of ground fell away before them. Garete raised her eyebrows.
A secret passage. How quaint.
Aedon is a paranoid sleeper.
Raoden crawled through the small space between ground and wall.
He had this passage installed to give him one last means of escape should someone attack his palace.
I thought things like this only existed in children's tales.
Aedon likes those tales quite a bit.
The passage widened after a dozen feet, and Raoden felt along the wall until he found a lantern, complete with flint and steel. He kept the shield mostly closed, releasing only a sliver of light, but it was enough to reveal the narrow, dust-filled passage.
You seem to have quite an extensive knowledge of the palace.
Raoden didn't answer, unable to think of a response that wasn't too revealing. His father had shown the passage to Raoden when he had barely been into his teenage years, and Raoden and his friends had found it an instant and irresistible attraction. Ignoring cautions that the passage was only for emergencies, Raoden and Lukel had spent hours playing inside of it. The passage seemed smaller now, of course. There was barely enough room for Raoden and Karate to maneuver.
Come.
He held the lantern aloft and inched sideways through the passageway. The trip to Aedon's rooms took less time than he remembered. It really wasn't much of a passage, despite what his imagination had claimed. It slanted upward to the second floor at a steep angle, heading straight to Aedon's room.
This is it. Aedon should be in bed by now, and despite his paranoia, he is a deep sleeper. Perhaps the one causes the other.
Raoden slid open the door, which was hidden behind a tapestry in the royal sleeping chamber. Aedon's massive bed was dark and quiet, though the open window provided enough starlight to see that the king was, in fact, present. Raoden grew tense, eyeing Karate. The woman, however, held to her word. She barely gave the slumbering king a passing glance as she moved through the room and into the outer hallway. Raoden followed her with a less practiced gait of stealth. The darkened outer hallway connected Aedon's rooms with those of his guards. The right path led toward the guard barracks, the left led to a guard post, and then the rest of the palace. Karate turned away from this option, continuing down the right hallway to the barrack annex. Raoden followed her into the barracks, his nervousness returning. She had decided not to kill his father, but now she was sneaking into the most dangerous part of the palace. A single misplaced sound would wake dozens of soldiers. Fortunately, sneaking down a stone hallway didn't require much skill. Karate quietly opened any doors in their path, leaving them open enough that Raoden didn't even have to move them to slip through. The dark hallway joined with another, this one lined with doors. The quarters of the lesser officers, as well as those guards, allowed room to raise a family. Karate picked a door. Inside was the single room allotted to a married guard's family. Starlight illuminated a bed by one wall, and a dresser beside the other. Raoden fidgeted anxiously, wondering if all this had been so Karate could procure herself a sleeping guard's weapon. If so, she was insane. Of course, sneaking into a paranoid king's palace wasn't exactly a sign of mental stability. As Karate moved into the room, Raoden realized that she couldn't have come to steal the guard's accoutrements. He wasn't there. The bed was empty, its sheets wrinkled with a slept-in look. Karate stooped beside something that Raoden hadn't noticed at first, a mattress on the floor, occupied by a small lump that could only have been a sleeping child, its features and sex lost to Raoden in the darkness. Karate knelt beside the child for a quiet moment. Then she was done, motioning Raoden out of the room and closing the door behind her. Raoden raised his eyebrows questioningly, and Karate nodded. They were ready to go. The escape was accomplished in the reverse order of the incursion. Raoden went first, sliding through the still open doors, and Karate followed, pulling them closed behind her. In all, Raoden was relieved at how easily the night was going. Or at least, he was relieved right up to the moment when he slipped through the door to that final hallway outside Aedon's chamber. A man stood on the other side of the door, his hand frozen in the act of reaching for the doorknob. The guard regarded them with a startled expression. Karate pushed past Raoden. She wrapped her arm around the man's neck, clamping his mouth closed in a smooth motion, then grabbed his wrist as he reached for the sword at his side. The man, however, was larger and stronger than Karate's weakened Elantrian form, and he broke her grip, blocking her leg with his own as she tried to trip him.
Stop!
Raoden held his hand before him menacingly. Both of their eyes flickered at him in annoyance, but then they stopped struggling as they saw what he was doing. Raoden's finger moved through the air, an illuminated line appearing behind it. Raoden continued to write, curving and tracing, until he had finished a single character. Aeon Sheo, the symbol for death.
If you move, you will die.
The guard's eyes widened in horror. The Aeon sat glowing above his chest, casting harsh light on the otherwise unlit room, throwing shadows across the walls. The character flashed as they always did, then disappeared. However, the light had been enough to illuminate Raoden's black-spotted Elantrian face.
You know what we are. That Aeon will remain for the next hour. It will hang where I drew it, unseen, waiting for you to so much as quiver. If you do, it will destroy you. Do you understand?
The man didn't move, sweat beating on his terrified face. Raoden reached down and undid the man's sword belt, then tied the weapon around his own waist. The woman still squatted next to the wall where the guard had pushed her, regarding Raoden with an indecipherable look.
Come!
Karate nodded, regaining her composure. She pulled open the king's door, and the two of them vanished the way they had come.
He didn't recognize me.
Who?
Raoden and Karate squatted in the doorway of a shop near the middle of Kei, resting for a moment before continuing their trek back to Elantris.
That guard, he was my husband during another life.
Your husband?
We lived together for 12 years, and now he's forgotten me.
That means the room we entered.
That was my daughter. I doubt anyone ever told her what happened to me. I just wanted her to know.
You left her a note?
A note. And a keepsake. My necklace. I managed to sneak it past the priests a year ago. I wanted her to have it. I always intended to give it to her. They took me so quickly, I never said goodbye.
I know.
Raoden put his arm around the woman comfortingly.
I know.
It takes them all from us. It takes everything and leaves us with nothing.
As Domai wills.
How can you say that? How can you invoke his name after all that he has done to us?
I don't know. I just know we need to keep going, as everyone does. At least you got to see her again.
Yes. Thank you. You have done me a great service this night, my prince. Yes, I know you. I lived in the palace for years with my husband, protecting your father and your family. I watched you from your childhood, Prince Raoden.
You knew all this time?
Not the entire time, but for enough of it. Once I figured it out, I couldn't decide whether to hate you for being related to Aedon, or to be satisfied that justice took you as well.
And your decision?
Doesn't matter. You fulfilled your bargain admirably. My people will leave you alone.
That's not enough, Karate.
You would demand more beyond our bargain.
I demand nothing, Karate. But you know who I am, and you can guess what I'm trying to do.
You're like Aedon. You think to lord over Elantris as your father rules over the rest of this cursed land.
People certainly are quick to judge me today. No, Karate, I don't want to lord over Elantris. But I do want to help it. I see a city full of people feeling sorry for themselves. A people
resigned to seeing themselves as the rest of the world sees them. Elantris doesn't have to be the pit that it is.
How can you change that? As long as food is scarce, the people will fight and destroy to sate their hunger.
Then we'll just have to fill them.
Riordan reached inside a pocket he had formed in his ragged clothing.
Do you recognize this, Karete?
Riordan showed her a small cloth pouch. It was empty, but he kept it as a reminder of his purpose. Karete's eyes blazed with desire.
It held food.
What kind?
It's one of the pouches of corn that is part of the sacrifice that comes with a new Elantrian.
Not just corn, Karete. Seed corn. Part of the ceremony requires that a grain offering be plantable.
Seed corn?
I've been collecting it from the newcomers. The rest of the offerings don't interest me. Only the corn. We can plant it, Karete. There aren't that many people in Elantris. It wouldn't be hard to feed them all. Goodness knows we have enough free time to work a garden or two.
No one's ever tried that before.
I figured as much. It requires foresight, and the people of Elantris are too focused on their immediate hunger to worry about tomorrow. I intend to change that.
Amazing.
Come on.
Riordan tucked the pouch away, then hid the stolen sword beneath his rags.
We're almost to the gate.
How do you intend to get us back in?
Just watch.
As they walked, Karete paused beside a dark home.
What?
Karete pointed. On the windowsill, inside the glass, sat a loaf of bread. Suddenly, Riordan felt his own hunger stab sharply at his insides. He couldn't blame her. Even in the palace, he'd been watching for something to swipe.
We can't take that chance, Karete.
Oh, I know. It's just that we're so close.
All the shops are closed. All the houses locked. We'll never find any.
Karete nodded, lethargically moving again. They turned a corner and approached the broad gate to Elantris. A squat building sat beside it, light pouring from the windows. Several guards lounged inside, their brown and yellow Elantris City guard uniforms bright in the lamplight. Riordan approached the building and tapped on a window with the back of his fist.
Excuse me, but would you mind opening the gates, please?
The guards, who had been playing a game of cards, threw back their chairs in alarm as they recognized his Elantrian features.
Be quick about it. I'm getting tired.
What are you doing out?
The men piled out of the building. Several of them pointed their wicked spears at Rayodin's chest.
Trying to get back in.
One of the guards raised his spear.
I wouldn't do that if I were you. Not unless you want to explain how you managed to kill an Elantrian outside of the gates. You are supposed to keep us in. It would be quite an embarrassment if the people found out that we were escaping beneath your noses.
How did you escape?
I'll tell you later. Right now, you should probably put us back in the city before we wake the entire neighborhood and start a panic. Oh, and I wouldn't get too close to me. The Sheod is, after all, highly contagious.
The guards backed away at his words. Watching Elantris was one thing. Being confronted by a talking corpse was another.
Open the gates!
Thank you, my good man. You're doing a wonderful job. We'll have to see if we can get you a raise.
With that, Riordan held out his arm to Karete and strolled through the gates to Elantris, as if the soldiers were his personal butlers, rather than prison guards.
You made it sound as if we wanted to be in here. Like it was a privilege.
And that is exactly the way we should feel. After all, if we're going to be confined to Elantris, we might as well act as if it were the grandest place in the entire world.
You have a measure of defiance in you, my prince. I like that.
Nobility is in one's bearing as much as it is in one's breeding. If we act like living here is a blessing, then maybe we'll start to forget how pathetic we think we are. Now, Karete, I want you to do some things for me. Don't tell anyone who I am. I want loyalty in Elantris based on respect, not based on my title.
All right.
Second, don't tell anyone about the passage into town through the river.
Why not?
It's too dangerous. I know my father. If the guards start finding too many Elantrians in the city, he'll come and destroy us. The only way Elantris is going to progress is if it becomes self-sufficient. We can't risk sneaking into the city to support ourselves.
All right. Prince Riordan, there's something I want to show you.
The children were happy. Though most slept, a few were awake, and they giggled and played with one another. They were all bald, of course, and they bore the marks of the Sheod. They didn't seem to mind.
So this is where they all go.
Karete led him farther into the room, which was buried deep within the palace of Elantris. Once, this building had housed the leaders elected by the Elantrian elders. Now, it hid a playroom for babes. Several men stood watchful guard over the children, eyeing Raoden with suspicion. Karete turned toward him.
When I first came to Elantris, I saw the children huddled in the shadows, frightened of everything that passed, and I thought of my own little Opius. Something within my heart healed when I began to help them. I gathered them, showed them a little bit of love, and they clung to me. Every one of the men and women you see here left a little child back on the out.
Karete affectionately rubbed a small Elantrian child on the head.
The children unite us, keep us from giving in to the pain. The food we gather is for them. Somehow we can endure the hunger a little better if we know it has come, in part, because we gave what we had to the children.
I wouldn't have thought
that they would be happy. We don't understand it either, my prince. They seem better at dealing with the hunger than the rest of us.
A child's mind is a surprisingly resilient thing.
They seem to be able to endure a certain amount of pain as well. Bumps and bruises and the like. However, they eventually snap, just like everyone else. One moment a child is happy and playful, then he falls down or cuts himself one too many times, and his mind gives up. I have another room, kept far away from these little ones, with dozens of children who do nothing but whimper all day.
Why are you showing me this?
Because I want to join with you. I once served your father despite what I thought of him. Now I will serve his son because of what I think of him. Will you accept my loyalty?
With honor, Karete.
I don't have much left in me, Lord Raoden. I've worried what would happen to my children when I am lost. This dream you have, this crazy idea of an Elantris where we grow food and we ignore our pain. I want to see you try to create it. I don't think you can, but I think you will make something better of us in the process.
Thank you.
Raoden realized that he had just accepted a monumental responsibility. Karete had lived for over a year under the burden he was just beginning to feel. She was tired. He could see it in her eyes. Now, if the time came, she could rest. She had passed her weight onto him.
Thank you.
Karete looked back at the children.
Tell me, Karete, would you really have broken my people's limbs?
You tell me, my prince. What would you have done if I'd tried to kill your father tonight?
Questions both better left unanswered.
Raoden smiled as he recognized the large figure standing outside of the chapel, waiting for him to return. Galadon's concerned face was illuminated by the tiny flame of his lantern.
Sul, by Dulacan, you're not dead?
Of course I am. We all are. At least that's what you seem to be fond of telling me.
Where's the woman?
I walked her home, as any gentleman would.
Raoden entered the chapel, Galadon following close behind. Inside, Marisha and the others were rousing.
Lord Spirit has returned!
Here, Saolin, a gift.
Raoden pulled the sword out from under his rags and tossed it to the soldier.
What is this, my lord?
That spear is amazing considering what you had to work with, but I think you ought to have something a little more sturdy if you intend to do any real fighting.
Saolin pulled the blade free of its scabbard. The sword, nothing special on the outside, was a wondrous work of beauty within the confines of Elantris.
Not a spot of rust on her, and it is engraved with the symbol of Aedon's own personal guard.
Then the king is dead.
Nothing of the sort. Our mission was of a personal nature, Marishi. And it did not involve killing, though the guard who owned that sword is probably fairly angry.
I'll bet.
Then we don't have to worry about Karete anymore?
No. As a matter of fact, her gang will be joining with us. Tomorrow we're going to visit the palace sector. Karete has something there I want you all to see. Something everyone in Elantra should see.
What is that, Sue?
Proof that the hunger can be defeated.